kill the moon.
All right, dude.
Blazing Quoting. Saddles, guys. Blazing Saddles.
I don't think it's allowed to be watched anymore, Dave.
Is it not?
When we were, nah, it's...
All right. It's one of the forbidden movies. Okay, fine.
It's a forbidden movie, guys. Don't watch
Back in the day, back in the day when...
Yeah. Anyway, so... if you want to, watch it at your own peril.
Yes, but that's your own lack of brain cells. That's your, on your
it's
own.
It's a Mel Brooks movie. Genius. Anyway, so one thing that we've been talking about is the way that, you know, the Miami Heat take basketball, how seriously they approach the game. And you're talking about Jimmy Butler. You're talking about Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra. You're talking about the entire organization. And
it's beautiful.
You know, one of the parallels we like to talk about a lot is the Thunder and how we hope that that level of approach to the game is something that we hope to emulate. Go ahead, bro.
It's that killer mentality, man. We've seen it enough in the NBA now to know that when a player has it, either people love it or they hate it. Organizations are either built a dynasty around that type of killer mentality or they crumble with that mentality. And we watched the 76ers crumble. We watched Chicago crumble. We watched, the Timberwolves. I mean, that was an automatic known right there that they're going to crumble. So, like, it's kind of crazy watching Jimmy Butler fit into Miami the way he has. Now, I don't think it's a coincidence that he is fitting into Miami because I do think it's one of those places that he's always wanted to go. You know, sexy women, nice beaches, like, doesn't matter. Nightlife is anytime, anywhere. And when J.J. Redick talks about Jimmy, he says the best thing ever. Jimmy's a real asshole. And the thing about real assholes is that when you're in a big city, real assholes blend in. When you're in a small city, real assholes stick out.
That's right. Well, you really killed it. Up to that last thing you were going to say, I was like, and that brings us to talk about this player. But now I can't do that after you ended it with the asshole thing. But minus the assholes, okay? Minus the assholes. There's a player we want to talk about, and I honestly think fits in with the Thunder culture. His team, he plays for Team France. I watched his highlights for the 18-under European Championship in 2022. He plays with Victor Wembanyama. And he obviously, nobody gets as much attention as him, but
for good reasons,
right? But when you watch the 18 and under French team, you notice that they have length on the wing position that would make any, sorry about that. We got a plane coming by. I'll let you talk
you're
a little
good,
bit
man.
About it, and then
you're
we'll
good.
Jump back.
We can't hear you anyways. We can't hear it.
Okay, cool. So, you got Dave, why don't you say his name? Cause I'm not going to say
all
it.
All right. It's Balala Koulibaly.
All right, there we go. Balala Koulibaly. I think I can say that, and I hope it's you're pretty close to being right because it looks like it's right. But
I mean, if I'm wrong and I'm butchering that, please correct me. But I sat here for about 20 minutes saying his name over and over again and properly listening to it on the French announcers with the French announcers. So I can't curl my tongue properly the way it needs to be, but yeah, close enough, I think.
Now, he's been brought to our attention by some of our listeners, and we always encourage anybody, if you have somebody that you want us to check out, drop his name in the comments, and we'll make sure we take the time to watch some video. And you know, but I think this guy legitimately could be our Usman Jang-style prospect of the year. If we end up finding a way to pick a player who has the biggest upside long-term potential, we've talked about a little bit his length, but his defensive aggressiveness and the smoothness in his jump shot really lead me to think that he could be like a legitimate top five prospect in this or top five player and maybe higher in this draft class. Much smoother shot than Mikal Bridges, but in a lot of ways, I love to make that comparison. What I would say is when you look at that French 18-under team, and you look at the length, and you were to like compare it to teams that maybe in the NCAA, like they're elite. they were elite in their length, in their ability to defend the wings, in especially since that's what's like the trending toward the modern NBA. Modern college basketball is trying to emulate the modern NBA, so they want players that are going to get drafted. And I really think he would be considered a much, much higher prospect if he was playing in college basketball. He did get overshadowed. I don't know if we'll pick him, but for me, there's every bit of a chance that he could end up being a superstar. And it's just because the way the game is played right now and his ability to play offense and his ability to play both ways, push the ball in transition. And he's really an elite athlete, and he doesn't need to be because of his length. So with all that to say, I mean, I think you're talking about potentially like a Kawhi Leonard type upside, even though he doesn't necessarily have the same type body type. I just think he's like a competitive winner.
Bro, I'll be honest with you. I'm writing all my notes down.
Jared at Sonic.
2 pages worth of notes, guys. I'm just going to be straight up and honest and start off with halfway through my notes, because I went into this really being like, it's not that I have something wrong with Balala. It's not that something I have something an issue with him. It's just the fact that I see so many guys that I rank above him in this draft, you know? So I went in this in a clean slate. I had to say, okay, stop like projecting what you think this player should be like, right? Because there was a play that I literally stopped it. I had a game on my computer. I had a game on my TV. And then I was just reading some scouting stuff and trying to pick out the things that I saw, you know, from reading it and then also what I was seeing. And to me, I had to stop because there was this play that he did where he pump faked the ball, right? And he went to the hole and he finished. And I was like, wow, that looked really familiar. And then he comes down the next time down and he takes a shot. Now, he missed the shot, but his release and the way he shot the ball is like, why does that look so familiar? And it wasn't until he came down the next time and he threw it down with authority that it all made sense. I was like,
okay,
this player is more like J-Dub than I've seen a player in the past. His size, his arm length. Like, listen, I'm saying this in all due respect to J-Dub. I'm not saying Ba'ala is that same category yet, okay? But I'm saying I see a lot of J-Dub's game, and that's how I started scouting him at that point. Like, how he would fit in this Oklahoma City Thunder system. How he would fit on defense, right? If you look at the way that J-Dub is on defense, and I see Ba'ala having the same type of intensity, the same hand speed, the same way of poking the ball out, right? And then he has the same turn and burn, and then he can finish above the rim so well, and it's springy, and he's just like J-Dub's thicker, right? But the way they play and their style of play, I just see it working so well in that Thunder system, and it's just like, holy cow, this young man could be that player that we draft if certain players are off the board. And if he's going to be that player that we draft, I think he would fit phenomenally in the system. All right, let's go over and start off with that being said. Let's start off with the things that I saw from the scouting stuff that I was watching. All right. First of all, is there are all these different sizes across the board for him. I hear 6'6", I hear 6'8". I even heard one person say he's closer to 6'9" than he is 6'8".
He looks like he's 6'7" to 6'9".
Yeah, he's someplace in there, right? He has that 7'2" wingspan, which again is something that's big because it's something that J-Dub has, is that 7'2" wingspan at that same around that same size, right? He turns 19 in July, so incredibly young. So his entire rookie season, he'll be 19 years old, which is, in my opinion, a big thing. He played a lot of shooting guard, small forward for the team that he played. More forward, I would say, than shooting guard, because he played a lot of defense behind Victor, where he would be able to hide behind Victor and steal, which, again, that fits for having Chet there. You know what I'm saying? So I'm watching that, and he's just very knowledgeable and all that stuff. So for us, I see him playing across the ball, a board from shooting forward to point guard. If he gains another 10, 15 pounds, he could play power forward if he is that true 6'8 size. So again, that's something to keep an eye on and watch. The way that he flies up and down the court, his open court speed, right? The way that he understands how to get up the court and the positions to be up the court, to be in front of the defender, behind the defender, or on the side of the defender, depending on the fast break, right? He knows these things, and he's 18 years old, and he's doing these type of things, and it's really impressive. I like how long and thin he is. His defensive awareness is something that is really impressive. The fact that he knows that a guy is coming down the lane and he's going to protect the ball in a certain way. So he brings his hand in, like I said, fast hands, and he's able to poke the ball away, slap the ball away. He does a number of different moves to get that ball away. He is an instinctive scorer. So he reacts. He reacts to how the defensive guards him. So if he's going to the lane and they got a big defender, he's going to take an extra dribble and he's going to get there. He loves the back door, bro. I mean, like, anytime that you see him getting the ball and he's cutting and he's going back door, this is what he does. He's the best cutter and back door prospect in this draft. His ability is going to be elite cutting that back door. He has an effective Euro step. Again, this is a league that I hope you would have an effective Euro step, because the defense is a little bit weird. Understands how to play on the fly, like truly understands how to play on the fly. Like it's sometimes when the game gets messy and all this other stuff, he knows what to do. He knows to cut to the hole and get to the hole. He understands his vision. He leads defenders away from where he's going to pass the ball. Right, that's an awareness of defense. Right, it's something that a lot of people don't understand. All right,
bro. Pause.
Yes,
I want to pick you up where you are, so I don't want to cut you off. I just want to say the comp that you're making me think, Trey Murphy the third. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, getting close to there for sure.
I mean, has that potential, and Trey Murphy has been incredible.
The most impressive play I saw Ba'ala do. All right, guys, the most impressive play was he got the ball below the free throw line, right? Three dribbles and finished with a dunk. Three dribbles, full court, finished with a dunk. I literally stopped it, rewound it, watched it again. I was like, no, there's a fourth dribble. No, there wasn't. Three fucking dribbles and he dunked the ball. Like truly like one of those aha moments. I'm like, holy shit, like that was crazy. Like, listen, if you can finish with three dribbles on an open court like that, it doesn't matter if you play college or, you know, on the French League or NBL or the NBL, you're going to be successful because that's the type of fast break that nobody can stop. It doesn't matter what league you're in. Three dribbles and a dunk, because that means you're so fucking fast that nobody else is able to catch up to you. He has a unique, undefined, electric finisher.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense? Shows you these electric moments, and then you realize that he still hasn't put it all together.
One thing that he reminds me of is like he has a nose for the basket, a nose for the rim.
Yeah.
But since he has a quiet demeanor a little bit, you don't really notice it until he's exploding at the rim.
Sure. You're absolutely right, man. And it's one of those hit miss things sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
He's a sneaky defender.
Yeah, that's true.
Super sneaky defender. Like like I said, he hides behind Victor. He slaps and out. Right? And then the best defending asset that I feel that he has, okay, that as a rookie that he could be impactful in the NBA. You ready for this? It's his pick and roll defense, man.
Okay. Yeah.
He gets steals off the pick and roll. How many players in the NBA do you see get consistent steals off the pick and roll or pick and fade? How many? I don't see a lot of them doing it, but he has figured out a way to get through the pick and get steals. Whether the guy's going back door, whether the guy's fading, it doesn't matter. He has figured out a way. And I feel like that could be an elite in the NBA.
It's because he can close a couple of the passing windows with his length.
Yeah. I mean, and it's crazy, man. It's crazy. The way he is able to use his long arms and recognize how to use them at this young of an age.
Like you said, he's really tall, but when he bends his knees, his hands almost touch the floor.
Yep.
And
And he knows how to lead a fast break, man.
Yeah, he does.
He doesn't matter where he's at in the court. He leads a fast break from wherever he's at in the court. And sometimes when you're like, being a coach, you're like, get to the fucking middle. You know, you're leading a fast break. Get to the middle, right?
J-Dub will throw so many outlet passes to him.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where he's at. He fills in perfectly wherever he's at on the fast break. He gets the ball. He knows what to do. It's one dribble, two dribbles, and he's dunking it. You know, it's one dribble, passing it. Like, he knows what to do. His instinctive play is amazing. He recovers so fast with his long arms on defense. It's truly spectacular. Guy will get past him, right? And he'll just give him a slight bump with his long arms. And you're like, holy shit. Like you said, when he's like, it's almost touching his, when he's leaning over, he's almost touching the ground. You know, like, that's how long his arms are, that when the guy gets past him, he's able to put his arms up and still stop the guy. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Then he catches up. And it's crazy, man, because if you learn how to do that, I mean, insane. And it all to come with all the things I just said, the thing I loved about most about his game is that I truly enjoyed watching the games that he played. Now, he's not an effective scorer on consistent score, right? He's an effective scorer, but he's not a consistently effective scorer. He's still learning how to do that, but he's only 18 playing in men's league. So
and that's when you look at mechanics.
Yeah, I see him and I say, this is the type of player that you have to put, go and say gamble with. Like, yes. Why? Because if he is truly 6'8", and he has a 7'2 wingspan, and then he puts on 15 pounds, he can play power forward, small forward, shooting guard, and point guard. And yes, the NBA is changing as far as, you know, like guards versus forwards and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But he's a player that could guard multiple positions. And even when we're trying to go small ball, if he's creating such an issue on defense for like somebody like Joker, I could see us going small ball and putting him at center if we needed to. Allowing Chet to go play the power forward position or whatever we needed to, he would be able to play that multiple position with a few more pounds on him. So I look at him like he could be one of those Ibaka players on defense with the block shots and stuff like that? For sure. For sure. Because the way he blocks a shot, like, this is really impressive that we have these type of players this late in the draft. Like, Rayan is, I would consider, right slightly above him, ranked slightly above him. It doesn't mean that Rayan's going to have a better career by any stretch of the imagination. But Mark said it the best, is that, you know, the French team has an insane amount of really good lanky guards. And we're starting to see that because we could end up with two of them very easily, with Usman Jang and Rayan or Balala. Either one I'm happy with, man. And let me say this. If you want to maximize Balala's talent, you got to get him a point guard like Josh Giddey.
Yeah, and like you said, his defense, his on-the-ball defense is very strong, and he has a chance because of like his length to hold his own from day one. But where he can really make an impact is off the ball, both in deny or like, you know, lazy cross-court pass, get out and run.
Yep.
Or I saw some nice things on, you know, just his blocking off the ball, coming over, like you said, Serge Ibaka. That was his strength, was the weak side block shot. So there's potential there for that. I don't really know exactly how much he'll block shots on the ball, but in the end, you don't need people to commit to blocking shots on the ball because
you just need to stop the guys that are trying to go around you.
Right, and stand them up, right? And let the defense, the weak side, get over. So,
I love him, man. I think he's a good player. If we stay at that 12,
With Jang. And you're talking about a really, really nice young core of two players that are the youngest on the team and will have a chance with like Poku to really hopefully be here in 5 years and be these type of players. People are like, wow, they would demand, you know, a top three pick if they had been picked 2 years later than they were. And now the Thunder have, you know, multiple players who are just in the pipeline who are developing, and like Poku showed what he could do before he got hurt. And that's right, the constant development. And I kind of think it, say his name again for me. I'm already broken on that.
Koulibaly.
Okay. Balal. Okay. Balal. So like he, is I saying right? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, but he, Balala. Balala, he could be like the Poku of this draft, right?
Yeah. I mean,
there's probably somebody else. It's more likely, but it's that wingspan.
You said it. You said it best when you said it. You saw a lot of Kawhi Leonard in him, right?
Well, yeah,
because,
I think
because this is the thing: is what do people say about J-Dub? He's a mini Kawhi. He's a mini Kawhi.
Okay, pre-draft, they said that.
Well, I mean, afterwards. Okay, I mean, not pre-draft, but like afterwards. Yeah. So the fact that we're able to say that. This player reminds us.
It's his help
of
side
a
defense.
Style of play is
it's
great.
His like you said, his pick and roll defense. It's his ability to turn what is normally an automatic play for the offense into a transition opportunity. Like those things are like when you watch it. Like, I mean, there's a reason they call Kawhi the Claw, right? It's like he was able to like grab the ball midair and remove it from the defense on a cross-court pass in a way that I had never seen before. And he did it so regularly that it changed the outcome of playoff games. And it's not the same way with him because he's out and running with the first touch of the ball. Like he's poking it out and going, but it's all like strategic. And like, he can run the fast break, like you're saying. I'm hopeful because like we say all the time after the draft, we say like, what does this pick mean about what Sam Presti thinks about the Thunder? And I feel like he's really like a player that could be helpful immediately and have a long-term impact too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Smitsa, I want to address this. What do you think about the rumors that OKC moves up in the draft? Listen, every year we hear the same thing. And you know why we hear the same thing is because Sam Presti is doing his good diligence in calling teams and asking them the price that they would have to pay for it. And because of that, teams are saying that Sam Presti is looking to move up, right? Because he's adjusting what he does. He's trying to figure out if there's a pick that is a value pick that he can grab from a team for next to nothing, or, you know, like the ability to shed cap space or get cap space. So the Sam Presti is just doing his good diligence on this matter. We heard it when we drafted Josh Giddey, and the Thunder were rumored to try to be getting I forget who it was. There's a center went to Cleveland. Blank.
Modi.
Moby. Whatever his name is. Anyways, so dude. Yeah, Moody. anyways, so I looked at that and I remember being like, I just don't think that Sam would want to necessarily move up to get a player like that caliber right now when a player like Josh is sitting on the spot at six. You know, because you need a unselfish player. And yes, you could go out and get him, but the reality was is that there was three big men over the next three drafts that were truly worth trading for. Modi? Chet?
I think it's Mobley, by the way.
I'm going to go with Modi. I don't care. Mobley. Chet.
I don't know.
And Victor. And he knew that if he got one of those, he'd be okay. So for me, this is why I feel like we got the better scenario with Chet. Even though we had to sit on it for a year, it doesn't matter. Chet is going to be one of those players that's going to come in and just dominate. And I think that with that being said, is if Sam moves up, it's because he truly values a top seven pick more so than his 12th pick, and he's willing to pay for it because in the long run, that's what Sam wants. And if that's the case, man, I love it.
I love it too, but I'm really doubting it because of a couple of things. I think, as we look at it, there is more value in pick 12 than pick 7. I think you can, if you have like one guy you feel like is the guy,
that's what I'm saying. If there's one guy that Sam says is the guy at 7, then I could see Sam moving, you know,
let's compare the two ideas, right? If you have like the pick 12 and you want to move up to pick 6, say, it's going to take that pick plus a couple future picks.
Two, yeah.
Okay. But if you want to move, if you want to keep 12 and get 11 from Orlando,
it's probably going to take you three.
So
yeah, just for three for the future. And it's three shitty ones, not like three really good ones.
So my theory is like, it's more likely that we grab 11 and hold 12, even though when that happened last time, I had never seen it or heard of it. So it maybe is ridiculous, but I just feel like there's so much value.
It's the price and value this year.
Yeah.
If there wasn't a thick mid range, then I would be like, you know, trade away.
It seems like traditionally, I'd say 8 or 9 times out of 10, each, you know, the drafts have good value at 12 through 16. One or two of those players have opportunities to be really good. The thing is, each pick that you go by, you know, down from that point, obviously, you know, you lose a significant percentage of that good player being left on the board. But if you're sitting at 12, it's a really good spot to be in. We've talked about it for years now. Like, if we could just find a way to have a top 12 pick every single draft,
we'd be in great
shape. When we're contending. Yeah, like, we would never have ended up in the spot we were with all the things that happened the first time we were contending. So that's the difference. That's what we got to figure out how to do. And that's where we're at, man.
I think you're right, man. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together, because when push comes to shove, we've got a lot of talent on this board, whether it's guard slash forward or it's a big man that we're looking at. There's a lot of talent here. So if I'm Sam Presti, again, I'm looking at it saying three okay draft picks that we have, the least, you know, valuable draft picks we have. Trim down those first rounders. Yes, three could be traded with for a superstar or whatever, but that's not what this is going at. Guys, this NBA is develop. They're not, I don't see the Thunder going out and picking a permanent superstar, semi-superstar to put on this team with Shea. I don't see it, because we would lose Dort or we lose a different player in order for that to happen. And I feel like this team chemistry on this team is something that we have to buy in. You know, we got to double down on.
Yeah, you know, I was watching, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but like a Jimmy Butler podcast with JJ Redick. I don't remember exactly which podcast it was, but I think it was this one. And there was a question about like team camaraderie and like, do you have to have like players who hang out outside of the environment, you know, outside of practice, outside of games? Is that important? And Jimmy was like, yeah, you know, absolutely. Like, there are some people who can't do that. You know, can do it, like, where they don't hang out and they work together. But in the end, it's really important to have that. And I think that's one of the things that is so underrated, is the fact that these guys are coming up together.
Yeah.
Like, if...
You're right. They're going out together. They're doing stuff together.
Those guys, you can have issues. And equally, potentially, as issue creating is bringing in new... older people who can create their own set of issues, sure. Right? Like,
yeah.
Maybe Perk was that guy, you know, where he was positive locker room atmosphere, but you could just as easily end up adding a negative locker room person.
Exactly. And that's why you develop the players, because you know who you're getting. Like, do you think a team that's trading a player is going to be like, hey, yeah, this guy has a horrible attitude, by the way. He, like, really sucks. Somebody you don't want in the locker. No, they're going to be like, he's a perfect leader. Confirm all the bad
rumors. Yeah,
exactly. He's a perfect leader. You know, like, you're not going to ever know what a player gets like until you get into the locker room or get him into the locker room. So, for me, it's like you put ahead of everything else player development, and the best things will happen because of it. I mean, literally the best things will happen if Sam Presti sticks to this player developmental role for the next 7 years. Why? Because... if we're able to, over the next 7 years, that means when Shea is around 32 years old, right, we've had enough turnovers saying that we have other players that are superstar roles now. And Shea's 32. That means we have other guys that are, you know, 27, 28. You know, we have blank amount of finals appearances, you know, Western Conference finals. You know, we have all this other stuff there. And then we're looking at it saying, what's the hap going to happen when we take Shea out of the question, you know? And then Shea is either going to get injured for a year, like all old players do, or he's going to get traded. And when he gets injured or traded, it's going to be known who are the guys going to be stepping up, who are the future of the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that's what's going to be exciting at that time, because it's going to be a lot of unknown getting to that moment. And when that moment happens, it's going to be like, okay, this is why the Oklahoma City Thunder kept all their draft picks or traded up to get these players that they got. It's because... these guys now are all ready for the crown and for the guys that are for the future of the NBA. And when I say the future of the NBA, when you got a group of guys that are between 24 and, you know, 28, 29, that are all peaking and starting to peak, right? And then you have a superstar that's 32 that's been leading them for 10 years, for a decade. You know, like, this is what it's all about. Like, this is what it begins. This is like... this is when I say dynasties are, you know, a lot of people say dynasties are bought. No, dynasties in the new NBA are built. You can't buy a new a championship anymore. I mean, I'm sure there'll be one team that sneaks through that buys a championship over the next decade. Mm-hmm. But all the teams that develop players properly are going to get the crown, are going to win the championships. And that's why Sam Presti has tripled and doubled down on what he is doing now. He knows it. He knows the future is bright if he does what he's consistently doing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of players that get us fired up, but obviously Bilala, I think I'm saying it right, he gets us fired up because I feel like what that would say would about what Presley was thinking about where the team was at would be pretty significant. And we're pumped up about it. And we're pumped up about Archie joining us from Prague.
That's pretty and baller, man.
Jared, while he's at work at Sonic. Yes. We appreciate you, too. You
guys are awesome.
Smitsta, as always, tip of the hat to you. We hope everybody's having a good day. My dog is pestering me because I did not get her on a walk yet. So I need to do that right now, guys. That's funny. I apologize. This is not as long as they've been, but we hope everybody's having a good Monday. Hope that you guys will join us throughout the week. And Dave and I just got back from hanging out with our families in a pretty dope river in Maryland. So yeah,
pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, dude. Grill out by the playground, one of those dope days. So I'm tired too, but dope. Pumped up, man.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, I appreciate everybody listening. Again, appreciate you, Archie. Tell the boys what's up. You know which one owes me money for the last thing I did for him, so make sure you mention that. I appreciate it.
Peace.